Accession number 18746, Reel 1.
Mr. Evis, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Lambeth, in London, in the year 1931.
Did you grow up in Lambeth and have your schooling there?
No, I was a baby at the time. We moved to Malden in Surrey in the year 1935. And then I went to school there, right up to about 9-10 years of age. Then we moved to Surrey, Worcester Park in Surrey. We was there for another few years, and as the family was growing up, we had to try and get a bigger house. And I ended up living in Cheam in Surrey up till I was 18. Went to school there as well.
So did you spend the war years in Worcester Park?
In Cheam, for 39 to 45.
Did Cheam get much bombing in the Second World War?
Quite a bit, mostly V2 flying bombs, you know, doodle bugs they called them.
What do you remember of the bombing in Cheam? What do you remember about it?
Well, we had the air raid shelter in the back garden, and then one day we all got into the air raid shelter as quick as we could because the air raid warning went off, and then we got in there and then shut the door. And then after about hour and a half, the bombing finished. And then as the all clear went, we come out and we see tiles and that was blown off of the roof, chimney pots, and doors been blown off, windows smashed.
How frightening was it, the bombing for you?
Well, it was really, because, I mean, we was only, 11 years of age then, during the war, and then the bombing got so bad that we was advised to evacuate all children, all school children, away from the bombing. And then we was sent down to Wales, and then we was in Wales for 3 years.
Whereabouts in Wales did you go to?
Llantrisant, just outside of Cardiff. Double L. INT.
What was it like at Llantrisant?
Lovely place. It was nice and quiet, no bombing there, and the people looked after us for 3 years.
Did they look after you well?
Yeah, very well. He used to go to school with her son, and we used to go to the same school. And right up till 1945, when the war started ending, and then we were sent home from Wales. We had to leave school down there because we was 14 years of age. And come back to Cheam in Surrey, where we lived. And I had to have a hunt around to find myself a job. Because at the age of 14 then, you had to work.
But how did the boys from London get on with the boys at Llantrisant?
Well, they had a bit of trouble at the first start off, but after you'd been there a while, we was all friends.
What was the trouble at first?
Well, because we spoke different to what they did. But after a while, you know, we was as good as them, and then we was all friends all round.
Did any bombs fall at Llantrisant?
No, they was mostly near the dockyards, you know. Port Talbot, the steel firms and that. They had a couple of goes at them, but we was quite a few miles away from there.
Did you feel homesick when you were in evacuation?
We did, but after about 6 months, the people made us very welcome there. They said, well, you're safe here now, you won't get no bombs here. And sit down and write your mum and dad a letter once a week, let them know that you're still keeping okay. And that's what we done, and they took us as one of their family. And we had stayed there for 3 years till the end of the war. Then we was allowed back home then, in Surrey.
Now, how did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, up to the, they still had, after the war, they had still had national service. And then at the age of 17 and a half, everybody was required to go up and register. And then as soon as you registered, 6 months after that, you got your calling up papers. And then you had to report to your various training depots. And that's where you'd done your training before you went to a regular regiment.
When did they call you to the colours?
9/6/49.
June 1949?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about being called up?
Oh, I didn't like it because at the time I was working on the railway as a fireman. And because I wasn't a past fireman at the time, I wasn't skilled because I'd only been on it about 9 months. Because I wasn't skilled, I couldn't get exempted from the army. So I thought to myself, well, I've got to go, I'll go and do it. And then we was called up, had our calling up papers, and we had to report to the training establishment at Shorncliffe in Kent.
What was that like?
That was hard. Discipline.
In what way?
Well, you had to do as you're told. And you had to be up early in the morning, wash, shave, have your breakfast. And at 8:30, you was on parade on the square, and where they put you through it, drilling. And then after you had your drill, you had to go back and get all your battle equipment on, and then go out on manoeuvres and training. We had 10 weeks there. Then they said, you'll be going out to Hong Kong in October. And this was in June. And so we had to do another 6 weeks continuation training to get used to the tropical climate.
Where did you do that?
We'd done that at Shorncliffe again, but you had to go to another part of the barracks where you'd done your continuation training, where you had to go so many days without water and things like that to get used to the tropical climates.
Which did you dislike most, the basic training or the continuation training?
Well, continuation training, really, because, I mean, you had to learn to go without things, and you had to learn to live off the land, you know, sort of survival training, more or less.
Were there any of the boys who couldn't take it?
There's quite a few, you know, like that, they couldn't take it. Some of them were sort of weak, like, and they had to build them up, you know, they build their strength and that up because they couldn't take the train because it was hard and vigorous. And they used to have a special squad there that they called the backward squad, and they could help them on and getting through their training.
Was there anything that you found difficult with the training?
Well, at the time, it was a lot of marching, and I used to suffer with my feet terrible. Army boots, they were too big, you know. And at the time, I took size 8. We haven't got no size 8, they said, have a size 9. Take it or leave it, you're in the army now, you know. And after a while, you know, we started getting sore feet and that, and then I had to report it. And they said, we'll have to try and get your right pair. And they got me right pair, number size 8. And my feet were all right after that.
So you were getting blisters, were you?
Yeah. The blisters here, and they kept saying, well, you got foot powder here, put it on your feet, keep them moist. And after a while, I went sick again one morning, and I says, No, I said, my feet are bleeding. So the medical officer says, what's the matter then? I said, my boots are too big, sir. And he turns around and he says, oh, we have to do something about that. And he called the platoon sergeant in. And he came in and he had a look. He says, good God, he says, I'll get down to the stores and get them to get a pair of size 8, he says. Because in them days, they used to throw everything at you. See? And say, oh, one of these, one of them, two of these, four of them. And you had to put them in your kit bag quick.
What was this foot powder?
It was in a khaki tin. It was the army foot powder. What was the name of it?
Did it do any good?
Yeah, it was brilliant, it was.
What was it supposed to do?
It was supposed to dry your sweat up on your feet, and if you're sore, and then it used to sort of get into your skin and ease the soreness away.
And it worked?
Yes, yeah.
So were you fit enough by the end of the continuation training?
Yeah, because then, after your continuation training, you had 14 days embarkation leave. And you went home, had your fortnight's leave, and then you had to report back to the barracks again at Shorncliffe. And then on the Sunday night, you got on a ship at Liverpool, Devonshire, and they took us out to Hong Kong from there.
What was that voyage like?
Oh, it wasn't too bad, except going around the Bay of Biscay and places like it, where it's a bit rough, like, you know, but it took about 8 or 9 weeks, I think, to get out to Hong Kong at the time.
What were conditions like in the ship?
Well, we had hammocks in there. It took me about 3 days to learn how to tie one up properly. Funny though, wasn't it? So in the end, I just used to sleep on the floor and lay on it. And sailor came up to me one day. Come on, he says, kid. He said, I'll show you how to do your hammock, he says. And he tied it up and I left it there for the rest of the voyage. So food was good on there as well.
And were you in a battalion by then?
No, we still recruits, like, and we pulse training. And we're going abroad to meet our new regiment. And halfway through the Mediterranean, they changed the draft. We were supposed to be going to Greece. And the Greece contingent, they had to swap them over because there was more of us than the Middlesex regiment. So this says, we're changing you over. All the East Surreys that were going out to Greece, we will now be going out to Hong Kong. And they said, all the one that was going out to Hong Kong will now be going to Greece. So they changed the destination overnight, more or less.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, I didn't like it, really. I thought, I wanted to go to Greece. But, as I say, we got out to Hong Kong. Well, we sailed from Liverpool on the 17th of October, 1949, on the troop ship Devonshire.
So you changed from being an East Surrey to a Middlesex?
Yeah, on the ship we had to swap cap badges and everything.
What were your first impressions of Hong Kong?
Well, we got out there and we arrived at the Middlesex depot at Fan Ling in the New Territories. When we arrived in the camp, we had to get off the lorries, and they all line up, and we had to march from the gate to the barracks. When we arrived there, the RSM give us a talk, and he says, you come to join a good regiment, he says, now, He says, "Well, you're here." He says, "Work hard," and he says, "You'll get on well." You'll get on well. And
what did you feel about his speech?
Well, he had a very high voice. You know, if you weren't smart enough and quick enough, mate, he used to make your life hell. But at the time, you know, I thought, well, I'm here for 18 months and just got to make the best of it.
Was it a good place to be in Hong Kong or not?
Yeah, lovely place. Yeah, it's still lovely now. I like to go back.
What was so good about it?
Well, it's another country. I've never been abroad before at the time. It was a new country, and people were nice out there. And the place itself was lovely to visit. Well, at the time, it was all shacks and that. But, I mean, now it's all skyscrapers and things. But at the time, we used to go out to the clubs and that, forces clubs, when you was off duty, and got on quite well out there, and I had a nice suntan after about 3 months, because when we arrived out there, we were all lily white, you know, and all the chaps that was already in the Middlesex camp, they had suntans, they was black, you know, and they was going home, and we was taken over their position.
Did you do much training there?
Yeah, hell of a lot. We'd come on route marches. We used to have this big hill just outside the camp. And we used to go up there and do patrols and that. We had our position dug in on top of this hill. And he was to keep watch over the borders to stop the communist Chinese coming over the river. And that, and
were they refugees?
Well, they were, yeah. But a lot of them were swimming over and that, and we had to sort of make them go back, you know. We was working with the Hong Kong police at the time.
Did you stop many of these illegal immigrants?
Well, we just used to go down there and say, no, you're not allowed, you know, and then they used to go away. But I never had no trouble or nothing with them, you know.
Do you think many got in even so?
Yeah, well, quite a few used to get through, you know, different places, because we was all different regiments all around the coastline, stopping them, see. And sometimes we used to go out on patrols in the boats in Hong Kong Harbour with the Royal Navy, hunting for drugs on the ships and the junk boats, you know, they used to call them.
Did you find any?
Quite a few, yeah. And used to, you know, take the boat in tow into port, and then the Hong Kong police used to take over there.
Where would the drugs be hidden?
Or in the bowels of the boat, hanging over the side of the boat in plastic bags, but under the water, and you'd think it was one of these buoyancy things, you know, they used to have. And they used to take them in, and that's it. Was out in Hong Kong for just over a year, and then the Korean War started, so they said we've got to go out to Korea, and then we asked for the 27th British Infantry Brigade to go out there and help the Americans out, because the Americans were already out there fighting. And
how did you feel about going?
Well, none of us, we was only 18 at the time, see, you know, just turned 18, and we was all scared, like, you know, national servicemen, and so anyway, I said, well, this is it, we got to go, that was it, and then we, well, when was that, that was 1950, it was about August 1950, I think that was. And we, they took us down to the docks in Hong Kong, and they put us on board the HMS Unicorn transport ship, and shipped us out of Korea from there.
Which platoon and company were you in?
A Company, number 10 platoon.
And who do you remember being the leaders of that unit?
Well, what the regiment, the whole regiment, was it? What, you mean the commanding officer?
No, I meant the platoon and the company.
I can't remember the officer, the company commander. I know our sergeant was Sergeant Harland, Corporal Gatlin, I can't remember the officer's name, the company commander.
How did the NCOs treat you?
Well, what? You proved yourself in battle and you was all right with them, because some of them were hardened from the Second World War, see, and they already knew what to expect. But with us being, like, more or less kids, you know, like, no young kids, don't know anything. And they sort of helped us on, you know. Oh, you'll be all right, son, you get used to it, you know. And then we arrived out in Busan in Korea, on the, you know, on the ship. And then as soon as we got off the ship, they put us on lorries and they ran us straight out the front line.
What was it like at Busan?
It wasn't bad, and it's, you know, a lot of buildings now have been bombed and shelled, and stuff blown across the road. Chinese tanks that was knocked out, lorries burnt out, buildings, one or two bodies lying about, you know. Then we went from there to a rest centre, and then we was told that we'd be going up into the front line within a couple of days. And then they put us up near this rest centre. When we got there, then they said, right, we're going up tomorrow morning up the front line. And when we got up there, we met opposition straight away. And when it eased off a bit, the Americans come walking up, and the Australians and the Canadians. And they turns around and they say, what's all this? And I said, what do you mean, what's all this? He says, sending kids out here to do a man's job. I said, us kids, I said, I've been trained, I said, 16 weeks. He says, sending kids out here to do a man's job. He says, go home to mum, he says, like that. And I said to him, you know, I said, you want to learn that? Shut your mouth, I said. What are you going to do, son? He says, and I'll put one in the breach. I says, no, like that. I says, open it again. I said, I'll blow your head off. I said, ain't like that. And I said, oh dear. And he says, oh, he says, all right, all right. He says, and then.
Was he an American?
Yeah, Yank, like the Yanks, you know, he said, what's this, sending kids out here to do a man's job? So a lot of them were all veterans from the Second World War. And then, in the end, we got the nickname of the Boys Brigade, because we was all youngsters. We wasn't veterans like the Second World War vets. So, from that day on, we got on all right with them, because we proved ourselves when we was out there.
You mean the Americans call the British Brigade the Boys Brigade?
Yeah, because we were all under the age of 19 and 20. We was only about 18 and a half when we was out there, when they sent us out there.
So, what was this opposition you first ran into from the enemy? What form did it take?
Well, we was advancing up the hill, And they got these little foxholes, they used to call them, see? And they was about 2 foot round like that. And they used to be in the foxholes, and these lids was on top of their heads. And they used to go down like that, and you couldn't see them. But they knew that when you walked past, they used to get up out of the foxholes and open up on you.
Did that happen to you?
No. I was up there a lot, and my mate turned around, where do they come from? He says, where do they come from? And that was all over the place, hundreds of them, see? So I was a brain gunner at the time, and I just opened up and started, you know, shooting them around that, and then they scattered. And then they had all these little tunnels underneath the mountains, you know, the hills. So in the end, we were throwing hand grenades down there, you know, fighting them off, and they was coming out the other end of the hill, mountain, and then the Australians and Americans got them as they come out, you know.
And this was when you first went into action?
Yeah, first day in action, that was, because the Americans turned around and says, that hill's cleared, you can go up and dig in. But we went up there and we started digging in, and as we was up there, now and again, you know, somebody used to open fire on us. And I thought, so where the hell is that coming from? And we looked around, couldn't see nothing, see, because they was in these holes, foxholes, and they used to come up now and again and go bang, and then get down quick again. So when we found them out, and then we started, you know, getting down the tunnels and chasing them out, and then the Americans and the Australians used to get them as they come out the other end.
Did you actually go into the tunnels?
Yeah, horrible, there were some of them, you know, and they told us not to go in, but we had to go in to worm them out, see, and they used to have booby traps and everything in there, you know, you had to mind where you put your foot. And one day we was advancing into a village, and we was going through this village, and my mate said to me, watch out for booby traps, he says. And everywhere you went, there was wires, you know, you probably got to trip over a wire and you get blown up and all that. And so I said, yeah, all right, I'll keep my eye open. And in the following day, we was sent up north to a place called Taegu, just up near the 38th parallel. And we got up there, and then it started getting cold. And with us just come out from Hong Kong, we had no winter clothing or nothing. And that was below freezing. And so the officer turned around and he says, right, we're going back into rest camp, he says, for medical examination. He says, foot inspection and things like that. And some of us hadn't had our boots off for about 3 days, because where you come to a river and you want to wash, you couldn't have a wash, because your soap starts to float all the way down the with the river, and the Chinese and the North Koreans, they see that and they're no